This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success. Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer here at the greatest stadium ever built, and this is the day of best. This $5.5 billion that went in this stadium, it's the number one screen in the world. It's a billion-dollar screen, number one stadium in the world. And now I have the number one app developer in the world. He is my friend, John Driscoll. He's the CEO of Naked Ventures. Welcome, number one.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. No, it's so awesome to be here. I'm such a big Rams fan. So
are you? Me too.
I love being here.
Yeah, we have to come awesome. To a game. We got a suite, obviously, for the Rams and the Chargers. Now, you know, it's one thing to have the technology background in order to facilitate being the number one app developer, but it takes a lot more. And that's why I wanted you to have on the playbook, because you have to have a playbook. You have to have a strategy, because it's not just the technical skills. There's a lot of knowledge of who and what in building to be number one at anything. And then there's a lot of desire. So number one, let's start with the basics.
Okay.
What do you think technologically makes you guys a step above the refs, living in the empty mile?
You know, it's interesting. We were really built on the foundation of user design more than the technology side. So I think at heart, we thought about users first. That was the biggest passion that Jason and I had, was like, let's be all about the user. Like, we want that clients to be happy, but I'm more interested that the app gets used,
like,
and that the user
Steve
loves it.
Steve Jobs had with Apple.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, no, one of my heroes, for
me
sure.
Too.
Yeah. So I think that that was the biggest thing. And when we made that foundation, like, hey, we're gonna focus on that, then we just kept layering on quality after that. Like, let's just get the best people we possibly can. Yeah.
The people.
It's all about the people.
And so when we're looking at skills, we have to find people who have the skills to deliver. Are there certain characteristics that you look for in the people that you hire?
You know, it's so funny. I think we're kind of all born to do a thing.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things I do, we go through the interview process. I'm like the last interview. And all I'm really looking for is, this person born to do this thing?
Wow.
That's really what I focus on. Will they fit in the culture, and are they born to do this thing? Because you can do something that you're okay at, but are you really, like, are you nailing what your gift is? And so I really try to find people, because I think they'll be happy if they're actually born to do it. Like, they're going to really enjoy their job. They're going to enjoy what they're doing. And they're probably going to go an extra mile for it, you know, if that's what they're doing.
That is really smart. And then looking at those skills that are necessary to align and move people's weaknesses to a place they enjoy or they're born to do makes it a strength. You know, I always say weakness is only somebody that's parked in the wrong place.
Yeah.
And you got to move them to a different spot. And all of a sudden, the strengths and weaknesses change or exchange positions. But there's a lot of knowledge that's necessary, especially when you're in a rapidly developing industry.
Yeah.
A lot of competition. And I think most importantly, in the knowledge part of what you do, it's how to distinguish yourself. And you get this in media around all the fakers. Because, look, middle-aged mutant turtles like me, they come to someone like you, and we don't know anything. So we are marks. We're worse than the person that comes into a car dealership to buy their first car.
It's kind of true. Because you don't know anything about how to make it.
And so, you know, you're competing not only with guys who know what they're doing, but you're competing with people that make up what they're doing.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
So, you know, what's interesting is I think it's our approach. Like, we don't really try to sell you on developing with us. We don't really. In fact, I wanted to get this t-shirt. I've been wanting for a long time. Like, don't develop with us. Because really, my real concept is really like, I'm going to be your business partner on the tech side of this. So I'm going to come along with you, and we're going to try to build this business together. So I really focus on the business. I really, like, what are you trying to do in business? What are you, what's your end goal? Not what technology you're trying to build. I think that's what everybody else is doing. We changed the conversation many years ago, and I think it's actually resonated with the community. Yeah.
It's so interesting because, as you may know, like, I simplify things.
Mm-hmm.
I love to put pragmatic steps,
make
them your own, and then utilize and better them, and then call me and tell me how you made what I framework together better. And one of the things that I think about when I, because I know your firm, right? You've worked with the biggest stars, the biggest companies in the world, some in Orange County, some around the world, but they are literally some of the biggest companies and brands. You have simplified your business to finding out what is it that you like and what is it that you don't like. Because values derive by giving people more of what they like and taking away what they don't like. And in the development space, to be able to understand that and then to execute for the consumer, the user's perspective, creates an amazing amount of value that's easier to articulate than overseller, back-end selling, lying, manipulating, and cheating. Like, and I'm saying this because 99% of all statistics are made up. I feel like over 60% of the developers that I've met lie, cheat, manipulate, oversell, and back-end sell.
100%. No, it is. You know, it's one of the things that we do is once we go through the interview process and we only approve 12% of the interested parties that, come and they actually pitch us to work with us, right? Like that's kind of the program that we've built up. And once they pitch us and they go through that, one of the things we look for is if they are not open to changing what they're working on, we're not going to take that because we need to come together as a team and build this together. And so if you have your ideas are so, you're so sure of exactly what it needs to be, then we're really never going to be a team. It's going to be you dictating to us what we should do. And we're just not interested in that kind of business. We want to work as a team and try to build the best thing. And so it takes some open-mindedness, some coachability, a lot of those things. And so if somebody shows those signs and they're not interested, we walk.
So it's so interesting that you talk about being interested, because one of my favorite lines is be more interested than interesting, which leads to the 80% rule in business, which I see Naked Ventures handling better than anyone else. Meaning, look, we can stimulate interest of a client, whatever methodology you have, and you're lucky because you're like me, right? They're coming to you and you're qualifying them. But you still have to transition that interest and then get to, as you stated, a shared vision. A teamwork, a program together that we both agree upon. But where I see Naked Ventures as a superior business is the most difficult part of web development and app development, which is managing and developing the vision, because there's so many things that change throughout the process in a go, no-go plan, a scoping, in this co-creative process. What are some of the tips that you've learned, probably from some dummy tacks, about, okay, we have a shared vision, we may even have a budget, we may even have a go, no-go plan, but what are some of the tips to manage and develop the vision when God laughs at you and who knows what happens?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because one of the first exercises we put you through when we work with you on day one, you know, we spend like 6 hours with you the first day. We'd like put you through this intensive program. And then, you know, Jason and I kind of came up with this concept that you have to think in terms of 3 years and 3 months. You know, what can we do in this 3 month period of time? And then how does that get us to that 3 years? And you know how CEOs kind of work in that same format, right? Yeah. Like we go 3 months at a time and quarter by quarter by quarter. And that's kind of how we teach people. We try to get them to not think beyond the 3 months, even though they have this vision. We're like, hey, you have the permission to talk about the vision right now, but we're going to put that away for a little bit. And we're going to say, what can we do in 3 months? And so this short-term, long-term thinking, like really going back and forth on that has really kind of been a secret sauce for us. Yeah,
I love that. I talk about divine direction or trajectory. And I try to stray away from outcomes and timeframes. Because that creates resistance immediately. Well, I need this done by. And then not only doesn't what you want get done because there's a divine direction of being in a better place, a better position, but time is a man-made construct. And development by its nature is co-creation. You're actually creating something. That's why the word development means what it does. You're evolving something that doesn't exist today. And that process can't be put under the constraint of a man-made construct like linear time. For you, how do you deal with the pressure, though, even within the context of 3 months of deadlines?
I feel like you need my people here to answer that question.
Well, that's a good thing, because then you're working on the business, not in the business.
Yes, for sure. So, you know, it's funny, because especially when we're inventing a new technology, and we often are, right? We're working on a project in Mexico City right now, and we are changing the way something is done. I can't talk too much specific about it. But when you're doing that, there's a lot of R&D involved. And so we try to really set expectations. Listen, this is, we don't know exactly how long this is going to take for us to get to the finish line. We're close a lot of the time. You know, it takes a lot of work, a lot of upfront thrashing is a great term Seth Godin really popularized. But it's really about like trying to set those expectations like, hey, listen, you need to be on this with me. I'm willing to try, but we don't know exactly how this is going to turn out.
And, you know, we talked about Jobs earlier, and I'm a big Walter Isaacson fan. You have Jobs, Einstein, and Musk.
Yeah.
And I've read all of those, and he does probably the greatest job of helping me get the insight into what I call intention. So he goes beyond the historical biographical background, but he really shows you, like, this is what Elon does, says, thinks, feels, and believes at this time.
Yep.
It's amazing. Understanding those three people for you, and they all were developers.
Big time.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
In different ways in history.
Yeah.
And will be known throughout history as maybe some of the best developers ever. What lesson have you extracted from the greats? You don't have to tell me which one or what, but
like,
where's that lesson that these guys, you know, have really taught you for development?
Well, I think one thing you could say about all those guys is they're obsessed, right?
Right. Like, intense and obsessed.
Yeah, they're super obsessed with this end result. But that end result wasn't, you know, they often seem like narcissists sometimes, right? Like people would say that. But they're really not. They've actually been very much empathetic to the user. Like, I remember buying my first iPad. I stood in line with my son. He was like super young. He's like 26 years old now. He was very, very little. And we're sitting in line, and I didn't even know if I was going to like the iPad, but I knew that Steve Jobs had such a good understanding of what I wanted that I believed it was going to be a great product.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he was empathetic to me as a consumer. And so I think what they've done with the Tesla, with, you know, all the things that, you know, they've really empathized with the user, you know, and they put what we call it naked, we call it butter, all over their products. And it's like, it's just like an extra little flavor. Like, I don't know if you've seen a Tesla on...
Everything's good with butter.
Yeah, right? Who doesn't like butter, right?
Go get a butter cake. You
know? Oh, I had one the other night. Yeah, Mastro's. That's incredible.
I know where my guy is going to be.
For sure.
Now I know where I've seen you before.
Oh, but for sure. Mastro's Bar, 100%. Yeah. So, but you put a little butter on there, and there's something about the consumer seeing that you care. That little extra care. It didn't have to happen. You didn't have to do it. When you go that far, the user, I think, feels like they've been heard.
You know what's so interesting is, for me, those same mentors, those so greats, the icons for me, and you know, especially Musk, right, is known for having Asperger's, and, you know, Jobs probably as well, Gates for sure.
Sure.
I wasn't around for Einstein, but he probably, considering what he achieved, probably had a different frequency, say that. But
yeah.
Empathy is a lot of times lacking, they say, with someone that thinks at that frequency.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found, it's a weighted empathy. And what I mean by that is, like you said, they weight the empathy of the end user, of saving the world, of changing the world, of providing the butter, you know, more than their employees.
That's a good point.
Right.
And they're all didn't feel that butter, did they?
Right. No. And even Einstein, the other scientists, the schools, the institute, he was not well liked. Right. They actually came up with an anti-relative, you know, society for anti-relativism.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, anti-Semitic is one thing, but anti-relativism. All right. You must not have made a lot of friends within the physics community to be ostracized for 10 years, even though you're a genius. How have you been able to... And I'm lucky because I'm in your backyard. So not only do I know the exterior successes, I know people that work for you. I know people that have worked for you. And you're very empathetic to the people, the user. Obviously, you've learned that lesson. But ironically, you're not like them in the respect that your people say how empathetic you are, that it's one of the best places to work.
You know, I appreciate you saying that. I don't know if I hear that as much as I'd love to hear. But, you know, I think unlike Jobs, I know people that worked with Jobs.
Me too.
you know, he didn't really care if nice. You were a happy employee.
Yeah,
you know?
He wasn't nice.
You know, he wasn't extremely nice. No. So
neither is Alon, by the
no,
way.
No, I haven't met him. I know some people know him, but yeah. So I would just say I want them to be able to make it the long haul. And I think because we're not, you know, we're not necessarily, you know, making a product that's going to change the world every day. I mean, I want to.
Yeah.
But I think that their company was doing some things that really required a lot of sacrifice, you know, and they were willing to make that ultimate sacrifice. I don't care how people feel. They get divorced with their families. They don't care about any of that, right?
Yeah.
And I've read that stuff, and I'm sitting there going, I don't know if I want that for my people. I'd like them to be happy. I'd like to leave them better off, you know, than when I found them, you know, so that they felt like it was a good experience, even if they didn't stay forever, that it was a good experience and it was a good path for their career. Yeah.
That's awesome. So last question.
Sure.
I know you're just getting started because you and I share the same mindset, heart set, and handset. Mm-hmm. That we're just getting started.
Oh, gosh.
But I like to take milestones backwards. I don't like to attach my emotions to outcomes in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But I love to take milestones. So, you know, last Valentine's Day, I was here. Or the beginning of the year, I don't have resolutions. I'm looking backwards going,
yeah.
Because now I can quantify progress according mm-hmm. to characteristics, emotions, money. Backwards, I can't do it forward because it's infinite. But mm-hmm. if I take two time linear time frames, I can evaluate that. In the same respect, if I asked you today, January 30th to 2024, whatever day it really is, what are you most proud of?
You know, it's so funny. My kids are getting older. You know,
that happens.
I've got a daughter. She's getting married in a few months.
Oh, congratulations.
And my son got married last year. And so, and my younger one, she's, you know, turning 17. I think when I see how they've turned out, because I think I worried a lot about the sacrifice I was making for what I was trying to do. And I'm so, you know, somebody said, you know, your daughter's such a high quality person yesterday.
That's awesome.
They texted me that. And I said, man, that just makes everything worth it, you know? And I think that relationship with them, to me is the most, yeah, I'm by far the most proud I am.
I love that. I heard the three stages. I have four children ranging 24, 22, 19, and 13 is the son, three girls. But someone told me, you know, there's three stages of being a parent. One is they idolize you, and then they demonize you, and then they humanize you.
I like that.
And most dads do.
Yeah.
Sounds like your kids are humanizing you, and we do. I share the pride and the values that you have, the prioritization that you give, the harmony between being a successful business person and a great community member, as well as a great family man. And I appreciate anyone that has a semblance of harmony within the pursuit of their potential. His reputation precedes him as being able to make a lot of money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. His kindness has always been his guidepost. The incredible John Driscoll, he's the CEO of Naked Ventures. Catch it off.